Hello everybody and welcome back inside the Shark Tank for another episode to chat through another sale victory this season with a nervy but ultimately, was it comfortable? I don't know. Win over Newcastle Falcons. My name is Alex, welcome back, and I'm delighted to say I'm joined by my good friend and co-host James. James, how are you doing? Are you happy with another win over Falcons? And yeah, what do you think that means for the rest of the season? Big questions to start the episode.
I mean, let's just get straight to it, no messing around. I mean, I was there. Living it up in hospitality, which was seems to be, of course, we chose the actual day, which was nice and mild, no rain, no funny smells coming across. We were in hospitality, but it was a lovely experience. And you know, it was great to see the club. You can see why corporate's going so well. And, you know, being usually I'm down with all the rest of the paupers. And you don't appreciate, I think, just how important the corporate experiences and the money is for the club. It gives it a really, really strong baseline from a commercial perspective. So yes, we need to fill the stadium, but that also means the corporate too, and I really enjoyed that. So I'd recommend it to anybody who's thinking of a special occasion, you know, whether it's in a box or in a CNC suite. It's a good thing. And from where I was sitting, which was right on the halfway line, in nice comfortable seats, was that, you know, we basically turned up for 30 minutes. We turned up for the final 20 minutes of the first half and the final 10 minutes of the second half. And that was more than enough to beat the Falcons. But I just don't think we were mentally switched on for the whole period. I think Falcons came and moved the point of attack really well. You know, it's obviously something that they've really thought about, you know, moving our big men around the pitch. But also it created points of difference from them for them in attack. And we did concede a lot of tries. So that's probably the big watch out for me. This is the first time I think our defence has looked pretty flimsy at times. I thought there was some good performances in amongst it. But I just thought that kind of from a physical perspective, looking at the team that Newcastle put out, which was, by the way, was a B team. This was the bottom of the table's B team that came basically and played our first team, give or take. Certainly first choice, you know, there was a couple of rested players. But, you know, we basically took it a bit lightly. And I don't know whether that's a conscious thing. I would never accuse the players of arrogance in that regard. I think, as always, professional support, you know, the difference is in the top 2 inches and in those final 1 or 2% and the intensity. We get it right more often than not. I just think, you know, we sort of turned up. The intensity levels were a bit lower. Before we knew it, we conceded a try in about 5 seconds. Really nicely worked try, scored in the left-hand corner. That shut the crowd up and it really affected the atmosphere in the ground. You know, we had about 6,000 in. Which I think was maybe a bit more than the club were expecting for the game. So, you know, hopefully that's on an upward trajectory now going into the Bath game. Hopefully we can look to, you know, 1v2, fill that stadium. But yeah, I just thought that defensively we weren't completely on it. Our intensity, we should have kept it tight and just annihilated up front, and then that would have created space outside. I think the score flattered us.
Yeah, I think that's a very good summary there, and I agree. I think that point about the intensity, and there just seemed to be a lot of inaccuracy in what we were doing, and it never felt like we were having a sort of meltdown or we were struggling and you know, we were chasing the game. It just more felt we were trying stuff. It wasn't quite coming off, and there was no build of momentum. And when we just, it almost genuinely felt like when we decided we were ready to score, we did, because none of our tries were difficult tries. You know, you look at the Rob Dupree one and the post, the Sam James one, it's kind of one pass. Even the Aaron Reed one, it's just one pass off a set piece. It felt like the sort of game where it was, right, okay, we need to score a try because it's getting a bit close now, and we'll score a try. And obviously that 4-point gap for most of the second half made it feel a lot more tense than it really should have been. And then, like you say, an ultimately 18-point gap between the sides is not a reflection of the game at all. When you look at when those tries were scored, you know, with 3 minutes to go, we were still only 4 points up, basically. And that's why I was trying to get my head around, was this a nervy win? Well, no, because we won by 18 points. Was this a comfortable win? By no stretch of the imagination was it that, because it was a very odd game. And I think Newcastle come out of it with a lot of credit, that Newcastle side that played. I think there's clearly some very good players there putting in really good performance, considering the disparity in the teams, the fact they were away from home. And it feels like Sale have probably got out of this what we needed, which is a bit of a kick and a bit of a, you know, you're not going to just run over every team and you need to execute accurately. And it makes a massive difference when you don't. And on the other hand, Newcastle have got out, well, they've got a bonus point on the road. They've got some really good young players who have got some experience against a very good team. And it feels like everyone goes home happy. And it's this kind of, you know, not in the spirit of Derby weekend, I'm sure, as Prem Rugby would want. But it felt like, you know, we've had the kick up the butt that we needed, and Newcastle have had the feel-good moment they needed to hopefully both go on. And you know, if we perform like we did against Newcastle against Bath, then we're going to get pasted. But I don't think it's going to be that way. So, yeah, it feels like both teams will be happy with it. But at the same time, I think you're right that, you know, if you're sitting in that ground watching the game at full time and it's 40-22, you go, well, that wasn't a very good performance. It was a performance filled with some good moments, but also with quite a lot of errors and inaccuracy. And we never really got the car going, did we?
No, we never controlled the game. There was lots of noise around me, you know, having a go at us kicking it. I really didn't mind us kicking it. I thought it was the execution that was poor. You know, like there were times, for example, I mean, Joe Carpenter, you know, actually did, you know, I think the most amount of meters, the second most amount of meters for Sale ever, as a, you know, as a player. But I actually didn't think it was one of Joe's best games. Yeah, he runs the ball back a lot, but I thought some of his decision making was poor. He was out of position a couple of times in the first half, one of which led to a try. And then also, you know, he was caught in possession as well, which basically led to the two tries to score. They scored in quick succession. You know, one of those was caught because he was crabbing along the field, passed it to Roebuck, having taken Reed's space. So Reed had to cut back in, was isolated. Joe, you know, we couldn't clear the ruck out. Reed was turned over, kicking behind. Gus Wall was in quicksand, and there was the second try. And that was taken because we ran the ball back. Not a problem. But you don't run and take the space of the people outside you and run across the field. So I think that there's, you know, like, don't want to remove the endeavour. That's Joe Carpenter's strength. But, you know, I think he's still got to work on his own kicking game, honestly. And is some of his decision making around when he kicks and when he doesn't. So just you know, a James Madeley opinion here that, you know, I really don't mind Sale kicking the ball. As long as we kick it well. And I thought there was a couple of occasions where we kicked it really poorly. Rob Dupria, Joe Carpenter and Gus War all made mistakes kicking the ball out of hand. Gus War panicked at one point when the ball came out of the back of the ruck a little bit quicker than normal. He's usually really good at those little dinks in behind in those moments. The ball was kind of charged down, and once again, we were massively under pressure. And it just felt, I think, in that period, people were blaming the kicking. What I was blaming was just very poor decision making and execution in about the middle 20 minutes of the second half, which brought a pressure onto us that we just didn't need. All we needed was just to see out the game. We had the bonus point in the bag. You know, we just needed to dominate up front and kick a couple of penalties. That would have taken us way beyond, and Newcastle just mentally wouldn't have been in the game at all. When the penalty opportunities did come, again, you know, there's groans around the pitch when Rob Dupree decided to go for goal. I actually kind of agree with that, because by the time we had that, we were only 4 points up. And therefore, a kick a goal would only take it to 7 points. So whilst that would be a 3-point takeaway from the game, I did think that both of those, that we probably should have gone to the corner. But we haven't had any time in there, 22. So you can understand some decision making. Again, just the execution of the goal kicking wasn't there. But when the opportunity came in attack in the last 10 minutes and the pace and the intensity picked up, you know, Rob Dupria was sublime, you know, and, you know, just thinking back to that final try by Roebuck was absolutely one of, you know, it was a classic this season Sale try, really. Really dynamic with the ball, looking to get the ball out wide as soon as possible, and an excellent finish from one of our young wingers. So all the things were there in those 30 minutes that we did play in the game that has made Sale look really good this year and will make us contenders. We're top of the table. We've done what we've needed to do. But a great opportunity for Alex Anderson to come into the dressing room afterwards and actually be pretty unhappy with that performance. And that shows just how far we've come, really. You know, a 40-22 win against Newcastle Falcons at home. I mean, you know, that they don't come easily, you know, in the history of Sale. And this one actually did come relatively easy in the end. And, you know, we can be unhappy with our performance and use that as motivation to get ourselves up for the game against Bath.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. It's a really good point around. I'll come back to the point you made at the end around kind of the standards we're setting as well. But just on the kicking game, I think that highlighting that turnover and tries is exactly right, because and if I think you were sitting where you were sitting, that's where my old season tickets were, and I distinctly remember some of those voices who did not like the kicking approach to the game from Sale Sharks. And I think that's, you just want to kind of get that clip and show that and go, okay, so we've run the ball back against Newcastle Falcons B team, so effectively this is, you know, the weaker side of the team are at bottom of the table. I don't want to say worst team in the league, but that's what the league table shows currently. We've run the ball back. These are still very good rugby players, by the way. So we've run the ball back, we've got isolated, we've got turned over, and we've immediately conceded a 7-point try because it's under the posts. And if we're doing that against Newcastle, then what makes you think that if we just run the ball back against Saracens, against Bath, against any other team in the league, that the same thing won't happen? And the problem is, against Newcastle, we can afford to concede 7 points because we know we can score 7 points. Again, you cannot do that against Saracens. You can't just keep running the ball at them, because they'll turn you over, they'll win penalties, and they'll kick you out of the game before you even know what's going on. So I think it's a good point on that.
Yeah, I think I like the running back. I mean, Joe Carpenter and Luke James both have a preference to run the ball back. Which has been absolutely fantastic. Why? Because it means that the defensive chase has to commit more players to it, right? Because otherwise you get line breaks, open field line breaks. That means you're retreating for your, so your next phase defensive lines are shambles. That is why, you know, sometimes if you lose the kicking battle and you get a line break from a run back, you know, it's better than a turnover. And it creates massive amounts of opportunities. But if you do it every time, it means that the team can commit those bodies to the chase, the kick chase, and they don't need to drop back 3-4 players into the backfield to cover the space, especially when you've got the 50-22 as an option now. Yeah, and that's what caught. That's where Joe Carpenter was out of position. A couple of times, and they had a 50-22. Because, you know, we only had one or two players in the backfield, usually Rob Dupree and Joe, and that should still be enough to cover the corners, and we failed in that. But, you know, that's when you don't want people to hit grass in the centre of the field either. So, you know, being able to drop those people back deeper, still have a sweeper for the chip over the top as well, that's what you want, so that when you've got the ball and you're surveying what's in front of you, you're making a decision. Can I put a pressure kick in, you know, like deep or a chip? Or am I going to try and run this back? Have I got the support there if I do it, et cetera, et cetera? So, look, I want to actually apologise a little bit, because, you know, the endeavour is a good thing, and we all want to see running rugby. And it's just lesson learned in that regard. You know, I think it's, you know, it's not always the right option, but it more often than not has been for us. So don't want to be too critical, of Joe or anybody else, because he's been fabulous to watch. And you know what's so good about him, just to turn it into a massive positive, when he does hit contact most of the time, his meters through contact is also extraordinary for a back. He obviously is incredibly strong from the waist down. People really struggle to bring him down, and he has an excellent fend as well, a natural fend. And so what that enables us is when he does hit contact, it enables the support and for the momentum to rook over and actually have quite clean, quick ball. So it's one of his massive strengths. Shall we have a quick look at three-word reviews?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you all for sending them in. I'll let you go through them, James, but I've an absolute feast of them this week.
It's been loads. It's been good to get back on the bandwagon. So Fraser Cornwall did what's needed. Taylor took them lightly. Simon Holman, banana skin dodged. Zach Sea of Gold, Reed and Roebuck. It's not the first and last time we've seen those two names together, Alex. Better defence needed by Dominic Stone. Stewie Lee, good season start. Phil Coffey, start your engines. Bob Rydell, top of league. Otis Donnelly, Bamba Asher, impact. Make a note of that one, Alex. Let's come back to that one. John Capel, South Stands singing. Peter Taylor, Asher Opoku-Fadjure. So what stands out for you there, Alex? What do you want to come back to though?
Well, we talked about the kind of standards we're setting, and there's probably two themes in those three-word reviews, aside from players, which yeah, let's come back to in very shortly. But there's the view that this has been a great start to the season. We're top of the league. We're setting the pace. We're continuing last season's good work, which is absolutely, I think we're right to be excited about. We've had a lot of years in the doldrums that we must enjoy it while we do it. And I think it has been a good start to the season. And winning that Falcons game is the kind of thing that we need to do, just win those games. And yes, we weren't at our best, and it's a tough opponent because of the. We always know Falcons are up for playing us, and it's a bit of a, as much as it's not a derby, there's a bit of an opportunity for them to get a scalp. So I think there's that enjoyment of it. And then there's also the standards, which is. This is a banana skin for us now, and this is kind of getting away with it and just take the points and get out because we expect to win this game. So I think you can see in the in our kind of Sale Sharks fan base there, the two, there's probably not competing like schools of thought, if it is appropriate to give it that techier title, but enjoy it. Because we're top of the league and let's love that. But also, we've got this kind of expectation of the club now. And I think it comes back to that point you made before about the groans when Rob Capria has taken 3 points. This is a team that we're expecting to score tries, to win games handedly, to beat sides like Newcastle very comfortably. And I just don't think that was the case 5 or 6 years ago or 10 years ago. So it's that level of expectation that is really good, and it means that we can enjoy being top of the tree while we are, and we've got another opportunity to stay top of the tree. 2 points clear, we're playing second place side at home on a Friday night, and a massive opportunity to be top at the end of next weekend as well. So that's very exciting. So I think that's quite nice to kind of sit back and reflect and go, well, this is a Falcons side who we've put away. We've not played our best, but we've still won by 18 points. On to the next one, and we're top of the table. What a time! So, certainly think it's worth enjoying that. On the other ones, I think it's worth talking about individual performances. We've talked about Joe Carpenter, who I agree, I thought had a good intro back, made a load of meters. Reed and Roebuck, I think, have been absolutely fabulous. That was one of the things I noted down when watching the game back. That just the, I mean, obviously scoring tries, but the way you talked about Joe Carpenter through contact, I think Roebuck through contact for that last try, unbelievable strength. Reed's pace is just, it's still at that ridiculously top level where it causes havoc for everyone. And I think you see in kind of Aaron Reed's try when he gets the pop from Rob Dupree, but also the Sam James try when he just runs under the posts, that we talked about it a couple of weeks ago, I think. They're holding defenders. And the thing is, they are a threat. And you can see that through the way that they're taking the ball and scoring tries when, the right decisions are made. but also they're creating tries for other people. So I think absolutely fantastic for those two. They're basically nailed down the winger positions, I think. And I think Tommy Vlahti has been one of our best players over the last season and a half. It's going to be a struggle for him to get back in the team. You know, when he first played, when he signed, we were massively excited. When he played for us last season, we thought he was brilliant, and he was. But, you know, this is a, how do you get Tom Vlahti back in this team? Because Joe Carpenter is our number one fullback, and Reid and Roebuck are probably our number one wingers, which is a massive boost for the academy, and a really good selection headache to have in that position. In terms of other academy players, and it was mentioned in three-word reviews, obviously we had some more academy, kind of recent academy grads come through. So Ben Bamba, Ash and Tom Curtis all came off the bench, all of whom were play or have played for Sale FC this season, I think. Well, I'm not sure Ben Bamba has, but, you know, Tom Curtis and Ash both put in a few minutes for Sale FC. So it's good to see them making that step up. And I thought that Ben Bamba had a decent game. I thought Asher had a really, really good game, really solid in the scrum. But also he replaced James Harper, who's another one I wanted to shout out as having, I think he struggled in the scrum a bit in the second half. But apart from that, his general all-round play, he's massively, as we expected he would, kind of filling out and filling those, starting to fill those kind of shoes that we need him to fill, which is to be the backup prop. And it's a really big sort of test for him this year, because he is number two behind Nick Shonnett. So I think the performance he put in was good. He looks really handy around the pitch, very athletic for a guy of that size, I think. And if we've got, you know, I sort of wrote down that if you're looking at the future at Tighthead here, and you've got Nick Shonnett, who is the number one, but who is obviously of an age where you're kind of looking at, right, what's the next options? What's 4 years' time look like? And at the moment, it looks like James Harper and Asher. And I think that's, it's quite exciting to see them start to come through now against kind of, you know, that Newcastle level of team. So it'll be, I was just really impressed with the scrum. And when Harper came off, I was, you know, you kind of naturally a bit concerned. You're thinking, is this scrum going to go well? You've got Ross Harrison at one, who's kind of, you know, I think still getting back to form a bit. And actually, we just melted them in the scrum from that point on. Not sure whether that's to do with their changes as well. So I was really impressed with the academy kids off the bench. I say academy, they're obviously senior academy. Some of them are just in the squad now. But it's that pipeline of, we've talked about it before, that you have this Reid, Roebuck, Carpenter, Doherty class who are now first team established. And it's about that next step, next kind of level to come through. And I think Friday night was probably the start of that you're seeing, okay, can they mix it at this level? And it becomes quite obvious quite quickly, I think, if they're ready or not. And it felt like, from my perspective watching it back, I'd be interested to see what it felt like in the stadium, that they were ready. And yeah, there'll be bad times to come and there'll be tough times to come, but there's definitely that potential there to go on and become a regular and do what Reid and Roebuck and et cetera have done.
Yeah, I mean, I think the really obvious thing in the stadium was the timing of the substitutions. The score was 26-22, and we took off Dan Dupree and brought Sam Dugdale on, right? We took off Sam Bedloe, who's been one of the most consistent players so far this year, and brought on Tom Curtis, yeah? We brought on Ben Bamba in the second row, and we brought on Asher in the front row. Now, that did need to happen, I think, because James Harper is a tremendously athletic lad, as you said, very mobile, quick. I mean, you know, if we can get him into actually running with the ball, I say good luck to anybody trying to tackle him, honestly. If he takes the ball at pace, he could be seriously dangerous there. And we should think seriously about how we use that. But he was knackered. And there's still a fitness element with James Harper, just like there has been with other players of his ilk, like Aaron Painter and people like this, just massive lads. You know, can you get fit and play 60 minutes of a game of rugby? Because you never know who's going to get sent off or injured these days, and coming off the bench like Dan Corlett's doing in 2019 and playing it like 75 minutes, he's got to be able to do that. So I think that's the next element for James Harper. But I agree, it's shown up well. When Asher came on, I mean, he's played at Loosehead as well in the under-20s. So it's like, okay, that's interesting. You know, normally when you're 20, you're not subbing off the bench at Tighthead. right? And he's not a massive lad. I mean, he really is not a massive lad. He doesn't have massive legs. He's not got massive shoulders. That probably makes him a difficult target in the scrum. What I was surprised about, though, was the power. And I think that a lot of that was Ben Bamber coming in and actually scrummaging behind him. You could almost see the power coming through there, which was absolutely exceptional. And he looks like one for the future. He also looks like he's got great feet. I mean, there was a couple of really good steps in there. His offload didn't go to hand, but no, he looks like an absolute talent, honestly. Whether, you know, he's going to be able to mix it against first choice adults, yeah, I'm not 100% sure, but it was the faith that Sanderson shown. Would you take off Dan Dupree at 26, 22 against Newcastle? I don't think I'd have the balls to do that. Right, but it just goes to show the faith he's got in someone like Sam Dugdale, who came in and was very physical, and that there was those substitutions and that kind of, you know, new energy and power, which actually then brought us back for those last 10 minutes that brought the two tries that made the scoreline easy. So fair play to all of those, and thank you to the three word reviews for highlighting it. I thought that was, you know, a key point in the game. Is there anything more, Alex, do you want to talk about in regards to this game, or should we have a little quick look ahead to next week?
No, I think we should have a quick look ahead to next week. I think the we kind of just end it on, you know, I know we haven't talked loads about this game, but I feel like it was one of those games where we could, you know, we scored some good tries and we've talked about it, but actually we spent a lot of the time really struggling to execute. And like you say, it's probably a function of not necessarily complacency, but we did what we needed to do. We take the win and we move on. And I think a lot of the time we talk about, we've talked about this game, we've started talking about the Bath game kind of accidentally. So it shows how important that is, but it's a massive clash, first versus second, Friday night again. So get yourselves down if you can, because it'd be a great atmosphere. I am going in the south stand with the paupers, as James Hospitality Boy calls them nowadays. So really looking forward to it. Obviously, Bath have been on some serious form recently. They've got an incredible amount of talent and it is actually working all together now. They've always had talent, but they've now got Ollie Lawrence firing at 100% after a kind of mid-season move from Worcester last season. They've got Finn Russell at 10, who is just, we all know, is probably one of the most talented rugby players on the planet. So it's quite scary. They've got Ben Spencer, who is the Sale Sharks' nemesis and always seems to have an incredible game against us. So I'm looking forward to seeing that again. And they've got a pack who are keeping them in games and allowing those players to kind of open up. So James, what's your thoughts on this Bath team and where the threats are going to be for this Sale Sharks team?
Well, I mean, you mentioned some of the names there, but I said it in this pre-season, you know, review that I did think that the Bath were going to be up there this year. You know, I think, you know, I wasn't expecting them maybe to be second in the league and fighting straight away for top four, but I thought that they'd be there or thereabouts. We saw a massive improvement at the end of last year, and they went on a big run and ended up in a reasonable state in the league. You know, they're sorting out their front five. You know, they've always had someone like Tom Don, you know, and Benno Urbano, who can mix it. But, you know, with Will Stewart and Showman and Thomas Du Toit, big new signing this year, looking at outrageous as a tight end, outrageous that he didn't make it into the South African squad. Obviously, many caps for South Africa, but he's still got, you know, a future ahead of him. He's still young enough. But, you know, they've got Alfie Barbary fit in the back row. He's very, very physical. Ted Hill, you know, Miles Reid has always been a really good player. Sam Underhill has actually had a run of games now, including the third place playoff for England, looks somewhere getting back towards his best. I think in the second row, you know, they're still lacking with Charlie Yules there. When he comes back, they'll be even stronger. But, you know, got a good young lad called Ewan Richards coming through, who's definitely going to be in the mix for playing for England in the future. You know, and likes of Quinn Roo and Josh McNally are locking it down there. But I still say that lock's probably their area of weakness. Ted Hill's also had a run out there for Bath as well. Obviously, incredibly mobile, still 6'6". But I think our way to target them might well be in that kind of line out area. They do have good options in the back row in the line out with Ted Hill and Miles Reid, but I still think at lock they maybe lack a little bit of power there. Other than that, you know, they're Schroeder and Spencer options at nine. They, you know, they're able to play in a certain way. At nine, which is, you know, really playing percentages, really good box kicking, both of them. And obviously one left foot, one right foot. So you know how they're going to play, both really good feeders to the fly half. And when the fly half is Finn Russell, the extra half a second that he has on the ball, that's really seriously bad news. And our defence is going to have to be on a much better path than it has been. In terms of the centres, it does sound like Ollie Lawrence is going to get a break because he was straight in playing straight after the World Cup. I don't know if that means that Cameron Redpath's, you know, back from his knocks, and Redpath and Ajomo in the centre. Well, you know, if they are creating space with Finn Russell and they can match us up front, then it is going to be a long afternoon for us, honestly, even with our defence. You know, we've seen the likes of Tom de Glanville, even when they're bottom of the league and probably going to get relegated, be really difficult to defend against. He's another one who always seems to have a good game against Sale. So, you know, I think that they're looking like a good side. They really, really are. They've got a good mixture of kind of English youngsters, not all homegrown. You know, they've kind of benefited a little bit from the Worcester demise. But, you know, it's good to see, you know, Bath back and operating. We know the Wreck is a cool place to go and a few drinks in Bath Town Centre. They're coming to us this time. Two home games in a row. It's really important we get this win under our belt because that really gives us a little bit of breathing room down to fifth if we do this. You know, it's really tight in the middle of the table. If we don't win this game, we are just in the pack. We're in the pack with 8 out of 10 teams, basically, or 7 out of 10 teams. Whereas if we win this, we're a bit out in front. And, you know, with the news that we've had today or yesterday on Tom Curry, which I'm sure we'll speak about next, you know, I think it's really, really important that we are able to keep our players relatively fresh, you know, not overdo it with rotation, but sensible rotation, just the same as you still even see some of the likes of Exeter doing now. I mean, they still rotate 4 or 5 players without fail every single game. And they're competing for top four. I'd like to see us, you know, to start doing that a little bit more. And there's signs that we are this year. So, yeah, I mean, is there a head-to-head that you are particularly looking forward to, Alex?
Well, it would be too obvious to go for Russell versus Ford, because that will be the one that's on all the marketing, and probably rightly so, because it is, I think, two of the best fly halves in the world. And, you know, they're probably both comfortably in the top five, I think. That's not too brave to say, but so that will, I think that will be massive on the game. I think Ben Spencer, Gus War, assuming both start, saw some tweets on about Gus War maybe needing a break. And obviously we still, I'm not sure where Raffy's up to. Haven't seen much recently. Obviously now Thomas has been on the bench the last couple of games. So I'm not sure if he's injured. So there's a potential head-to-head there, which I think is two similar-ish styles at nine. But we'll see. I think if Tom de Glanville's playing, de Glanville Carpenter at fullback could be really interesting. Obviously, it's never going to be a massive matchup head-to-head, but two slightly contrasting styles. I almost see that as the South versus North battle. I think Joe Carpenter's got that proper Northern streak of, like you said, you know, we'll run it back and go through a tackle, whereas de Glanville sort of seems to just glide around the outside every time in a carefree way. Not sure whether that encapsulates the South v North battle, but maybe it does. So I do think there's head-to-heads all over the pitch. You know, you look at someone like Will Muir against Tom Roebuck, you know, really strong, pacey wingers, and Will Muir scored a try, I can't remember, it was this week, just gone, or the week before, where he just bounces someone off, and he does it all the time. The strength the guy's got is ridiculous. So no, I think there's, like I said, matchups all over the pitch, and I'm quite looking forward to seeing those pitted against each other, because it feels like Sale have got really good attacking strength now. And I think the Newcastle game, we didn't execute massively accurately, but we do have a really good attacking shape, and Bath are building very good attacking shape. And it always feels like Cam Redpath has got a point to prove against us. And I think you've got those players, like I say, who seem to just step up their game against Sale, and maybe they're just this good every week. I don't think they are, because otherwise Bath would win the league if those players played like they do. So yeah, it's all in the back lines for me. I know that's very boring, and I apologise to any forwards who want me to talk about second rows and props and scrums, but it doesn't quite feel as tantalizing there. I think almost we have the edge there, maybe. And I think what worries me more is in the backs, where I think Bath probably have the edge. So for us, it's going to be better if it's a forward dominated game and it's not too free flowing. And, you know, that's not very entertaining as fans, but that is probably going to play to our strengths. So I think that's probably how it's going to go. And therefore, there's probably a match in the forwards that I'm missing. But yeah, I mean, we can't really move away from Ford v Russell, can we?
Ford v Russell is going to be exceptional. Two completely contrasting styles of play, really. Not that George Ford is defensive, but yeah, he has a kicking game, which is the best in the world, in my view, out of hand. And you know, Finn Russell will be looking to take the ball to the line. And that's going to require a really good, you know, man marking job from our back row. I think the head to head that I'm looking for is and we use this as a segue to talk about Tom Curry, but I think Underhill against Ben Curry, I think, is a bit of a playoff for the open side role in the Six Nations. I think that Ben Earl will probably continue at eight in the Six Nations. I don't think Bunipola will continue now. He's not going to make the next World Cup. And if he wasn't first choice in the World Cup, and I see no reason to kind of go backwards. And I don't think the likes of Alex Donbrandt has done enough to get back in. And Zach Mercer, I think, is kind of definitely in the mind. But again, he hasn't shown enough for Gloucester yet to be like, well, he's definitely going to be eight. So I think Earl will be at eight, which means that, you know, I think that Underhill, Ben Curry is the battle for seven. I think that's going to be a great game. Two completely contrasting sevens. Underhill is more of a kind of kamikaze, fly into everything seven. He's not great ball in hand. He can carry the ball, but he's not a link player. But he's somebody who's great over the ball, hits rucks, and is an excellent defender and tackler. I've always compared him a little bit to Joe Worsley in that sense. And then, you know, Ben Curry definitely is that link player, tremendously skilled, quick over the ground as well, can play out wider and hit rucks as you need. So let's just talk quickly about Tom Curry for a couple of minutes. Out for the whole season, needs his hip cleared out. There's question marks over his whole career, according to a couple of reports, that he might not be able to recover from this injury. How much of a problem is this for Sale in England? And you know, how are you feeling about it?
Yeah, well, obviously gutted from a Sale fan perspective, but also from just, you know, for Tom as a player to miss a season is really gutting. And I think it's obviously been a really tough kind of last couple of months with everything that went on at the World Cup, which we mentioned briefly on the podcast, but didn't want to go into too much detail on. So, you know, it's been, you know, he's gone through all of that, and then kind of that injury is going to be another blow, really. And I think it's a real shame. So firstly, gutted for Tom. I think, what does it mean for Sale in England, kind of moving on and looking at it coldly? Well, I think it's a massive blow for England. I think it's a bigger blow for England than it is for Sale for me, because if you look at who England have lost post-World Cup, you'd be looking for certain players to carry the team through to the next one and kind of use that. And if you look at, you know, I think the problem for England is if you look at who was around in 2019 and who is still around and will probably make the next World Cup, there's a very limited pool of players, and Tom's one of them. You've probably got Owen Farrell, but you know, as you start to go around the rest of the team, you're looking at people like you say, Billy Vunipola, Courtney Laws is obviously retired, you know, someone like Jamie George, probably not going to make the next World Cup, Dan Cole, the same, Joe Marlon, the same. So there's that almost leadership group that England have, you started to struggle to, you know, keep that together with losing Tom. So I think it's a massive blow for England. And, you know, he's obviously an incredibly talented player and a massive part of what England do, just in how he's been sort of moulded by Eddie Jones into the player he is today. For Sale, it's obviously a huge blow to lose someone of that quality, to lose someone sort of that integral to the club. And I think the club are quite looking forward to getting Tom back and seeing him play again. From a squad perspective, yeah, it's going to be a massive miss in the semi-final if we get there, and the later round of the Champions Cup if we get there. I don't know how much of a miss it's going to be for like the rest of the regular season, because And that's not because Tom's not a very good player. It's because he doesn't really play for us that often. Because, you know, you've got World Cup recovery time. So when would he be coming back? Probably about now anyway. You know, so you're back in for round seven, this is. You've then got, obviously, the Prem hasn't been played during the Six Nations this year, so it's slightly different. But if you think about last season, we played most of the season without him because of injuries and because of England duty. And therefore, you get used to operating without those players and kind of learning to... I think one thing that has been really good from Sale is folding those England players back into the squad as and when they come back, because players like Manu, for example, who's another good example, you know, miss a lot of club game time. So it's, you know, because of the slightly different complexion of the Premiership, I think it remains to be seen whether it's going to be quite the same this season. But certainly, if this was last season, I'd be thinking, well, I'm gutted that we've lost him for the semi-final and the final. If you know, you're looking back and going, what games would we want to play him? But actually, the rest of the season, you know, it's, we either didn't see him or we probably would have ended up in the position we were at anyway. So it's hard, I think, from a sales perspective. There's a very good point made by, I think it was Martin Whiteley, on just the depth in our back row. We are obviously dealing with injuries. You've got Dan Dupree, who is quite injury prone, and the other players in that back row who, you know, we're kind of down to a minimal sort of squad base now. So I think it tests our depth in the back row massively, but I think we were going to be tested in depth in the back row anyway, so hopefully we can find someone else to bring in to kind of cover that. You've obviously got someone like Tom Ellis, who's not really been around this season.
Okay, well, let's wrap that up there, and thank you everybody for listening, and please give your predictions for the game on Twitter.
Yes, thank you everybody for listening, and we are looking forward to the Bath game on Friday night. So let us know your predictions, as James says, and we will see you next week to hopefully review how George Ford is better than Finn Russell. See you all next week.